Welcome to the Nordic Mythology Podcast. I'm Daniel Farrand, owner of the company Horns of Odin. Before we get into today's show, I do have to do a little bit of housekeeping, and that is the promotion of our Patreon, because it's how we keep the lights on. So for £3 a month, you're going to get a bonus episode every single week where we do a Q&A with our guests after the main show. You can submit questions before or during the live chat feature, which is another perk, is that you get to watch the episodes live. You're also going to get ad-free episodes, early access. Like I say, you can watch them all live. You get access to our Discord server, which is a lovely little community we've built over on there. And you also get a monthly story time episode that I do with Jonas Lorentzen, which are a little bit different to the main shows. We sit down and read through a different saga and have a laugh. There's usually beer involved, and it's just a good time. So like I say, that's from £3 a month. It works about 10p a day, and it really does help us keep going. So if you can check that out, that is just patreon.com/Nordic Mythology Podcast. And if you can't, then even just a like, share, comment, all the usual stuff across the different social media platforms. It's just Nordic Mythology Podcast on there. But today, to get into today's show, to welcome Dr. Terry Gunnell back to the podcast. I think it's been a couple of years since we last spoke. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we were both younger at that time, certainly.
I mean, technically we were.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, my name's Terry Gunnell. I'm Professor Emeritus of the Folkloristics at the University of Iceland, and that's where I taught courses on Old Norse religion, and then also folklore, folk tales, folk beliefs, traditions, and things of this kind, where naturally, in both cases, Yuletide is a sort of central feature of these, and that's what we're going to be chatting about, right?
Absolutely. Yep. So, okay, where would you think the best place to start is? Because I guess for me, I was thinking maybe if we give a overall description of what Yule is, what Yuletide is, because I think it's a term that gets thrown around a lot at the minute and gets tied in a lot with just general Christmas.
Exactly. So I think maybe here it might be useful for us if we go straight to share screen here, and then I can show a few things at the same time, a few pictures.
So for anybody who is just listening to this, all our episodes are posted, the video versions on our YouTube. So that's Nordic Mythology Podcast on YouTube. So you'll be able to see all the lovely images that Terry pulls up.
So this will give us a little sort of background before we start chatting about a few other things later on. So the origins of Yuletide, and that's what we're going to be keeping to here rather than Christmas. Yuletide being the Old Norse, the Yule being the Old Norse word for Christmas. And here we're especially thinking about not Christmas itself, but midwinter. That was the big festival at this time of the year. And for the Old Norse people, the year was divided into two seasons, which was summer and winter. And winter came first, and that was followed by summer. And winter began in a period called the Winter Nights, which is actually Halloween. Christianity turned the Winter Nights into Halloween later on.
Okay.
And that was the beginning of winter. Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, just to jump in. Would Christmas have existed in its own form amongst Christians at this point, or had it not been?
Christmas itself, we don't know exactly when they actually took up Christmas with this date, because there's no idea exactly when Jesus was born or exactly even when he died. But these were dates that the Christian church adapted, partly as they were going along, to connect Christianity to the existing traditions, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. So, as we'll see later on, there was a process of deliberately connecting old traditions, old festivals to Christian festivals.
Okay.
And so here we're talking not about the beginning of winter is what became Halloween. Midwinter is what became Christmas. The beginning of summer is what really became Easter in many ways. And then Midsummer was the other festival, which was the which became St. John's Eve later on. So these were the big festivals which were changed. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about Yuletide here rather than Christmas. And First of all, we need to realize that this was it was essentially the longest night, shortest day, midwinter. And that was something that actually moved by date. There was a problem with this later on because the year that the Julius Caesar had set up was too short. So by about 1500, then the 13th of December had become the longest night. And that confused things a little. And we'll come back to that later on. They changed it and brought the Gregorian calendar we have now. But okay, the word Yule, let's look at that to start off with. So there is a in old German, there's a word Julis, old English Jola, which was the month of December, according to Bede. Jolnir is one of Odin's names. We have a Joculus in Latin, which the idea of Saturnalia, merriment, perhaps. It might be connected to Earl, as you'll see later on, the making of ale. It might be connected to what I've got going on outside my window at the moment, hail, eel. And then the wheel, hjold. And those of you living in England and Scotland will maybe be aware of traditions where you get burning wheels rolled down hills at this time of the year. It's part of the circle of the year. It's the time when we go over the darkest point and come and start, light starts coming back. The time of being grateful that you might survive the winter.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it's worth remembering that a lot of people were a lot more connected to nature, and it was so much more significant these times of year.
Absolutely. And as you can see in the picture here, as a Viking farmhouse, you're pretty connected with nature around you and the mountains and everything else of this kind.
That looks like I would love to stay in there for one, maybe two nights.
Wouldn't be nice.
And
Firelight.
yeah, it would be nice for a couple of evenings, but then I would like to go home to my creature
Absolutely.
comforts.
But one has to be aware of when you're inside this house in the wintertime, everyone's moved inside. It's getting very dark outside in the middle of the winter. Snow levels coming down, getting closer all the time. And you're inside. This is later on in Iceland in about 1800s. People living in the room together, pretty close. And this is what the Viking longhouse had turned into, again, with beds along the side, and the Viking times is a fire down the middle. And this is the time when the doors between the worlds open up. It's when we get connected to a whole range of other spirits that are intruding into our world or sort of retaking over our world. So we've got trolls, we've got nature spirits, elves, álvar, huldufólk. And if we go through them, we go in Icelandic.
So sorry to just jump in because I keep getting questions as we're going along.
Keep juggling.
Do you think that connected to all these, I guess, mythical creatures is to do with the darkness? Because obviously it is very dark.
Absolutely.
I guess you're inside, so you can't go out and be as active, so you're going to be telling stories, I guess.
Absolutely. And the folklore of both Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Iceland is full of stories of this kind. As these beings come in from outside, they start retaking over nature. And in Norway, and at Christmas time in the past, some people never dared go outside. So you've got trolls which hate Christmas bells to start off with. It drives them nuts. And we get them stealing in some of Icelandic folk tales. They steal priests out of the church for sushi to sort of eat them and get them to shut up
Oh,
with the
really?
bells that are driving them nuts, because the trolls stay pretty pagan.
Okay.
Next bunch, ghosts. And if we go into the sagas, right from that time we hear about Christmas ghosts. Eyrbyggja saga, for example, has this wonderful story of how a number of people have been dying, drowned, and also dying of an illness at Christmas, and they're having a Christmas party, and suddenly the doors open and the dead come in and just take over the entire place, and they all have to leave. And every night this happens, the dead come in and take over the building, and they have to leave and go somewhere else. And this is a story that comes back in all sorts of folk tales later on. It becomes the we'll come back to the Wild Ride maybe later on. But even stories of Bruce Willis versus terrorists and Home Alone with the awful Macaulay, whatever his name is, the same idea of the house being taken over by beings from outside and needing a hero to get rid of them. So ghosts, Grettir's saga has exactly the same idea. Everyone has to leave because of a particular ghost which comes in, and he has to fight at Christmas, just like Bruce. And in fact, regretted gets very much like Bruce has the same thing. Every time Christmas comes along, he has to go out there and save the world from beings taking over an airport or a block of flats or whatever else.
We can qualify Die Hard as a Christmas movie. Because of this link, then it shows a clear lineage from Yule through to Die Hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially the hero, the single hero who comes in and takes over. In Bruce's case, of course, he has to get his shirt off and bloody himself a little bit and wear his vest and so on. These are the same stories that are going on of the outside taking over the inside. Wow. This picture here is one of the most famous Icelandic folktale for Christmas. It's a guy who's arranged to meet this girl at Christmas, and she doesn't get to hear that actually he drowned trying to cross the river before Christmas Day. And on Christmas Day, there's a knock on the door, and there's this guy outside who's come to pick her up and take her off to a dance. And she gets on the horse, and as he goes along, his hat lifts up, and she suddenly sees a skull underneath his hat. And realizes that, oops, this is a bit of a problem here. How do I deal with this one? And they get to the church, which you can see here, and then he's about to drag her into the grave with him, and she hasn't buttoned her coat up completely, so he just pulls her coat into the grave, and then the earth sinks over the top of him, and then they have to get a priest to deal with him later on. But again, ghosts is the time when, as I say, so trolls, ghosts. Here's another picture of him riding along.
That last one is an absolutely beautiful picture. The one before that.
That one.
Because I was looking at that for a good few minutes and I didn't even see the ghostly figure. And he's right in the middle. I was just kind of, I don't know if my eyes hadn't figured it out yet, because he is obviously quite translucent. And I didn't even realize he was there until you mentioned. I was like, oh, shit, there's a ghost in the middle of that picture.
Exactly, and you can see through his legs right there, which
it's really well done.
Yeah, so here's him, them riding along across the river later on. So the other bunch that enter our world are the Alvar or Huldufolk. So Alvar, they're not elves. It's the same word, but they're full size human, as like human beings. And then Huldufolk means the hidden people, and these are the nature spirits that live in the landscape. And they move houses often at Christmas time. They, if you go to Crossroads, you can meet them there, and they'll maybe give you gifts. Mm-hmm. Here we have a modern version of them. He's giving a mobile phone, I think, to the person here.
An iPhone.
Yeah, there you go. And people like my wife here on New Year's Eve will go around the house with a candle and say to people, which means all of those who want to come to our, all of those who wish to stay, all of those who wish to leave, do so, but don't bring any harm to me and my family. And this is the idea of the spirits who've moved in at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And the Álvar, who often in Icelandic stories, In Norwegian stories, it's the wild ride that takes over the farm later on and is saved by a man with no name. In Iceland, it's a bunch of Alvar who do the same.
Mm-hmm.
So here we come to the most famous lady here in Iceland, if we're looking at Icelandic Icelandic beasties. And her name is Grýla, and she is a sort of ogress who lives up in the mountains. She goes back to at least the 1300s as a sort of figure who wanders around threatening people. And her name really means the growler. And she's looking for badly behaved children that she can put into her bag and eat, uncooked, later on, sushi style. Here she is, a bit larger.
She's terrifying.
Yeah.
I feel like I may have seen her down the shop.
Absolutely. So she is the biggest threat, and she is the symbol of Christmas in Iceland.
Oh, okay.
Children are somewhat terrified of her. And she has very early roots, which we can come back to at the end. But they said, I think they may even come back to the idea of a goddess being in charge of Christmas time. But we'll come back to her later on.
And
so
that feels
she's
like
central.
Such a
Yeah, go on.
juxtaposition compared to, I guess what I grew up with was like the Santa figure of,
Oh,
if it's just kind of, you want to be good, so you get presents, or maybe you'll get coal. Whereas it seems like the symbol there is, be good, or else you're going to get eaten, which is very kind of, it's the same thing ultimately, the kids being good, but very different ways around it.
Absolutely. And it's changed, as you'll see in just a minute. The earlier ideas were that you gave things to spirits. The idea that Santa Claus gets cookies, for example, or some brandy or whiskey or something left out for him and the reindeer, that's the oldest element of it, rather than him giving presents.
Oh, it is. Okay.
This is, in a sense, spirits coming from outside that you need to keep happy with you, who are sometimes acted by people who come around in animal costumes, and you give them drink and food. And so this is the root of the tradition, which I think is very, very old. So if, just to run through quickly, her adopted children in Iceland are called the Yule lads. Scandinavian, in Norway, we have Julesveinar as well, or Iceland, Jólasveinar. So the Christmas lads, and these all live up in the mountains with her. Every area of Iceland has a particular mountain where they live. And then they come down one by one as Christmas approaches. There's 13 of them, usually. And they leave little gifts in shoes in the windows of Icelandic houses as they come down. So it's not one Christmas man, there's a whole bunch of them. And they're a bit like sort of slightly degenerate, but old Hell's Angels without bikes. We come
Okay.
down to it. And you'll
Sleds?
see, sorry, say again.
Do they have sleds?
No, absolutely not. They walk. They've got sticks. This is what you do here. Don't sledges or skis. They walk
no,
down from the
ski.
mountains.
Oh, I feel like
Absolutely
skis
not.
would have helped you there.
No, of course it would. But if their names tell us a great deal. And here's Grilla again. This is her chasing children. She had a husband. Well, she has had two husbands. The first one she ate because she got annoyed with him. She's really the first feminist in Iceland when it comes down to it. This is her later husband, who's called Patch Fool, basically. And they look after these other bearded guys up in the mountains, these Christmas lads. Here's one of the shoes with the that children get things put into. If you don't behave yourself as a child, you get this thrown into your in your shoe. Our
Potato.
older, uncooked potato.
Okay.
Our older daughter once got a potato like this for not going to sleep at all, and then opened the window and threw this uncooked potato out of the window in the hope that she could brain whatever nasty Christmas lad guy had put this in her shoe. How dare he? So this is So here we go. These are the guys. They've all got particular names. So Stekkjastøð, which means sheep pen pole, got wooden legs. Giljagøð, gully gawk. The picture's here by a wonderful Liverpudlian who lives up here in Iceland called Brian Pilkington. And he does all the Christmas cards for everybody up here.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they are. They're stunning.
Yeah, so Stúlfur is Titch. There's Spoon Licker, who sort of preceded dishwashers in Iceland.
Okay.
And you see, they've got a lot of uses, these guys. We have Pot Scraper next.
They seem like the kitchen help.
Yeah, exactly. But they get worse. Bowl Licker, another cleaner here.
Okay.
Door Slammer, he's a bit more annoying. Hurðaskellir.
I'm guessing that could that just be like the explanation for when it's windy,
yes,
and obviously you get
absolutely.
such bad
Wind,
weather up there.
Noise, sound, whatever else. And their names go back to the 1800s, at least the earliest verses we have. And then we get other sides of them that they take food. Curd Slurper, Skyrgalmur, Sausage Swiper.
I
So
feel like
they're taking stuff.
These are just excuses for the dad of the family who's a little bit hungry in the middle of the night. And he's
There
like,
you
oh,
go.
Yeah, the sausage swipe has been in again.
Bjugnarkræken. This is the guy who gets arrested most often.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Guy. Keyhole Sniffer, another sound element. Meat Hook, another meat stealer here. We're putting a hook down the chimney and taking as young guys used to do sometimes, to fish the lamb or whatever it was out of through the chimney.
Oh, really?
People's
Is that
houses.
People really did that?
Oh, yeah, there are traditions like this because there are bunches of young men at the same time going around in masks at this time. So acting these parts, the stories make the masking bunch more real, and the masking groups make the stories more real for children.
Okay.
And then another, the last stealer here, Kestersnikid, he comes right at Christmas, Candle Beggar. And along with a few other names here, Rafter Hanger, The Whistler, Stoneface, Foxy, and then Manure Licker, which is a particularly disgusting name for one of these guys.
Yeah, how's he
Lung
got that?
Splatterer. There you go. If you meet one of these guys in the night, they're not the nicest.
No.
And along with them, we have this guy, which is the Christmas Cat. The Christmas Cat will eat you if you aren't wearing new clothes at Christmas. So a lot of Icelanders find themselves being given new underwear quickly to avoid being eaten by the Christmas Cat. So
I feel like so many of these are just like tales to make kids behave. And
yeah, it is. Yep.
We see that time and time again. I think I've told this on the podcast before, but there's a statue in the middle of Huddersfield Town Centre it's called Lion Chambers, and it has a stone lion on top of the building. And my mum used to get told when she was little, if she wasn't home before a certain time, the lion would come down and eat you or chase you home.
There
So
you
it's
go.
It's this story that kind of, it's just parents trying to make the kids behave.
But it certainly underlines the element that there's this fear about Christmas. This sort of figure from Germany.
He's terrifying.
But if we look just very quickly, and then we can come back to a general discussion in a minute, if this idea of female figures being the center of Christmas, which is very, very old, if you go to Ireland, Scotland, you've got a figure called the Caoilte, who is a personification of winter and hunger, who travels the country very much like Grilla does. If you go to Norway here we see again a figure with a bag and a tail and horns beside one of the original Yule lads. And she's an earlier version of Lucia, who later on gets candles and things, but a sort of animal horned figure. And this is what Lucia, of course, looks like later on in Scandinavian Sweden. But if we go to other countries, go to Austria, you've got this figure, the Pechten, who sometimes comes around with St. Nicholas. Really frightening figures.
Mm-hmm.
Krampus, some people have seen films about in recent years. There was a wonderful number, for those of you living in Britain, number 9. There was a number 9, I think, about the Krampus, sort of horror comedy. More of these sort of figures, children being threatened.
When you really think about it, it's quite terrifying.
Yeah.
These figures, quite demonic looking, and they just come and steal and abuse children.
Exactly. And it's Austria. The here we go back. As you see, in each case, the horned figure, which some people have tried to connect to Satan, but it's so widespread across the Germanic area that we're not talking about Satan. We're talking about a sort of goat. Whether this is connected to Thor is open to question, but certainly a horned figure that visits houses.
So this connection of the goat to Satan, because it is, for most people, it's just synonymous. There, you see it in movies all the time, people sacrificing goats to bring the devil. It's linked to like Satanism. So do we know where that comes from, or is it tied to all this? Because you do see them linked, and obviously a lot of these have that similar kind of look to them.
Absolutely. Going to the sort of hooves rather than real feet and then horns, Grilla certainly is like that too. I think, again, we've got a blending of ideas as Christianity adopts and is trying to get people to quit their earlier ideas. But these are certainly very, very old figures, without any question. And very often they're females, which is sort of interesting too, like we have with Pechten and Grilla and the Kayak. So this is Norway, where you have Denmark, the Tomte, little figure who you give porridge to in winter. He doesn't come to Iceland. But he used to live in the grave mound on the farm. He was the man who looked after the farm initially as a spirit. and protected them from, as we come back to this idea of spirits coming down from the mountains, attacking the farm and taking people, taking food, which are then acted by people as well. So here's the wild bride. Again, led, here you have a female figure right at the front, the sort of Valkyrie idea.
Yeah.
And this was so real that you can see in Norway here, people putting tar crosses on their houses to protect them from being attacked by this group. So this is a really living belief that people were terrified of in Christmas time. And these are some of the figures that would go around in Norway wearing animal costumes, the Christmas goat figure. And so
is that maybe where, because you often see like the Yule goat.
Yep.
Is that tied to
exactly
this?
The same idea. This is the, so people would dress up as the Yule goat. You see it outside IKEA, of course, IKEA.
Yeah.
As the symbol. But this one here, where people, this is on a pole and the mouth would open and shut, and it would come in and chase children around the kitchen when it came and was given gifts to go away, just like the spirits. And here are later versions in Iceland of similar sort of female figures coming to dances. So yeah, that's the Christmas lads back again coming down from the mountains. So if we stop sharing and I can come back to just talking to you, any questions immediately on that for yourself? And then we can go into other things.
So the Christmas lads, they have a very Father Christmas look to them. Is that just a modern thing?
Yeah, I think we think about it, as with Halloween is the best example, of course, of very ancient Irish customs, Irish and Scottish customs being taken to the States, and then pagan elements, which are then Christianized and brought back. And here, of course, Santa Claus is initially the Christian St. Nicholas. But again, Christianity is borrowing ideas and blending them to make them more acceptable. We have this wonderful letter in Bede's History of the Church from about 731, a letter from Pope Gregory telling people, don't try to make them quit their religion, just rename it. Let them go on doing what they were doing before, but now in a Christian name.
Because it makes it so much easier to assimilate.
Of course. So just renamed in one way or another. One other interesting element of it, though, if we think about the female figure, is that Bede talks about the Mother's Night, which is in the middle of, right in the middle of the midwinter. And of course, on one side, yes, Virgin Mary becomes a central figure. But again, it's quite possible we're talking about the female figure.
Mm-hmm.
And just to link that to Old Norse mythology, certainly, if we go back to the beginning of winter, that was also called Halloween, was also called the Disablot, the blot, the set sacrifice to the Disit, a female festival. It's the same time when women would come around and prophesy how the year is going to be, because it's the beginning of the year again. And in Sweden, we have another Disablot at the end of winter. So with this and the female figure coming into the houses, Nepomagrila, the Kayak, it looks like winter is a female period. It's the time when everybody moved into the house, which was the female-dominated area.
Mm-hmm.
It's the time when in nature, activity is going on in the dark, in the ground, in the world of the dead, and death is becoming life.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see, in a sense, for some people, it looks, this is my argument essentially, but other people have seen it in other countries, but the year was maybe divided into male and female.
Okay.
And therefore the winter time was the time of female spirits. And if we note just in mythology how rarely husband and wives meet up. Freya is going in search of her husband, Odd. Thor is away for a good period of the year. Who are you going to call? Thor, but he's away in the other world somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You never get Freyr and Freya together. So in a sense, this idea of God searching for or going away for some of the year and then coming back, a circle.
Okay,
Which I think is worth considering.
I guess could that be linked to you know, the weather cycle, because obviously you would get Thor would be, I assume, attributed to when there's thunder and lightning, when it's stormy. Yeah. And obviously you're not going to really get that in the summer. So in that time, he's elsewhere.
Well, I think he's here in the summer, in a sense. He's bringing rain for the crops. It's just, the summertime is the time of market, of Viking raids, and of coming to law meetings. Okay. This is the male period, and we see that, for example, in this description by Adam of Bremen about the three gods in Uppsala, and there's no women there at all in terms of the gods.
Okay.
So I think Thor, essentially, a little bit like Freyr, is essentially male period is the summer period. Mm-hmm. The winter period is the period of dark growth and mystery and seeing into the future, which women can do. Mm-hmm. It seems regularly. Women have this ability. We as guys have very little of that kind.
Yeah, that's true. I guess we have to completely stop thinking about the calendar how we think of it today, because there was a moment when you were speaking there where I feel like it clicked a little bit in my mind, where I always think of all this stuff in what I know, which is, you know, we have 12 months and the year starts again at January the 1st. Whereas they wouldn't have had that concept of the 12 months that we have and the calendar system that we
They had a system of months because of the moon, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gives that. But the months began at different times.
Yeah.
And they had different names initially. So you had, as I say, Juli was roughly from, I think, 25th of November to 25th of December, something like that. So they existed certainly there. But if we're thinking old Norse terms, we need to get away from the idea of day coming before night and the idea of summer coming before winter, or the year beginning in midwinter, which is a bit, it's the middle, it's not the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So the year begins with night and begins with winter. And that's why Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve are so important. Scandinavia, you start Christmas at 6 on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And not on Christmas morning.
That's because I was lucky enough to be in Norway for Christmas last year. And that was, there's a few things that stood out. And the celebration of effectively giving your gifts is Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
It's not Christmas Day. Like as a child, I just remember, you know, running downstairs and opening my presents on Christmas morning. Like it was that whole thing of has Santa been, and whereas it was completely different.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one. So we need to think of the year slightly differently. If you can survive the winter, that's the mountain to get across. You'll get through the rest if you don't get killed while you're sailing your ship to England or something, or in war. But the other thing that continues into our own time, as I say, the idea of giving gifts to Santa and the reindeer, that's the oldest, to give thanks to whatever spirits are going to visit. But then the brewing of ale. And of course, I was in Edinburgh just the other day, and one wonderful thing everywhere now is the seasonal ales, the Yuletide ale. Mm-hmm. And this was a law in Christianity. Christianity took this over, that you had to make ale for Christmas and give the priest a lot of it. If you didn't give the priest, you got fined. So it's a way of getting booze. But there's no ale anywhere in the Bible. Well, of course, we have this idea of changing water into wine and whatever, which is about the only funny thing that Jesus does there. But the ale wasn't. An ale, the idea of a winter festival, of any festival really, as any sacrifice with drinking of ale. So that goes way back to early times.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on in my mind right now. And the main focus I have still is how the negativity that seems to be around this time, as it's quite evil's not necessarily the right word, but it's a time of, you know, monsters almost coming in, and if you don't behave, they're gonna chase the kids or steal things.
Yeah.
And it's such a difference to what most people associate with like our Christmas time, particularly people who've grown up outside of Scandinavia. You know, there's a lot of people that listen to this. They're in England and the USA. And we have this idea of a very jovial, happy time. Christmas is a time for celebration and happiness and giving gifts, spending time with your family. And there's not really much negativity other than maybe if you're a little shit, you get coal. But it seems like it's so completely different that it's almost very doom and gloom and nihilistic.
I think it's a blend of both, isn't it? In a sense, what's going on here is a time when you admit the power of the supernatural as it comes in to receive the gift, in a sense, for the rest of the year. You hope the sun's going to come back. That there's a reason for darkness. You hope the sun is going to come back.
Yeah.
And it didn't. And the Scandinavians also, back in their deep memory, 536, the sun didn't come back for 3 years. At that time, because of volcanic eruptions.
Mm-hmm.
So it was never for certain. And even Völuspá, the prophecy of the seeress, you've got the idea of the winter which takes over at the end of the world. So we have, in a sense, the supernatural visiting us, and you give it something to pay homage to it, and then it goes away. And you can celebrate that. You can celebrate the fact that you're still alive and that the sun is going to start returning now. There's a reason for celebrating. So both the dark and the light, hand in hand.
So I think it's probably worth taking a second for most people to remember how, you know, as kids we grow up and we realize Santa doesn't exist. So it's just a thing we do. It's part of our culture that we kind of do
you
every year.
You think he doesn't exist? Aww.
Well, you know, but I guess back when most of these stories would have been told, there is a real belief in them and a ritualistic kind of gift giving, or you're shaking your head.
Yes, absolutely. And given further credence by the fact that these figures did appear, and you go to Shetland and places as well, the geysers in Scotland, I think you get it around the New Year period as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come in and they would make strange sounds with their voices as they came in, and they said that they come from this beach which nobody can get to, and demand their food and drink, and if they don't get it, then they're going to destroy your farm. So again, threats personified, in a sense. These two go together very much. And what's happening there also is the farm, the community playing a game together. The house, the doors are open, they come in, they're given gifts like Santa Claus is given gifts, and then they accept you, they bless you, and they go away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a blessing from the outside.
Something that we have such a disconnect to today. Or me personally, in my life, I think the way I was brought up, we didn't have any of that. So to think back how people did genuinely believe in something and then had to give some sort of sacrifice to stop this thing happening, I guess because they, you know, as science advances and we find out the explanation for why certain things happen, they didn't have that luxury.
Right. Take away the electric light as well. You've got the Viking farm, which is going to be full of smoke, and it's cold, incredibly cold outside often. Smoke, candlelight, firelight, and then noises outside from the waterfall or the glacier or the rock slide or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
It's spooky.
It really is. I was on the first time I ever went to Norway, we stayed in a little cabin up by Tinn, and the cabin had no electricity, no running water. The toilet was outside and like a little outhouse. And I was like, this will be amazing. It's very romantic. It's lovely. It looks over this stunning valley. And it was, but then you don't realize until, especially, you know, in February, March time, the sun goes down really early and you've got candles. There's no power, so you've got no TV or anything. And then it's kind of just like, oh shit, what are we going to do for the for the rest of the time. We can't go out for a walk. You don't really want to be driving down off the mountain. We can't see very much. It's getting quite cold.
Right.
Particularly at the time, we weren't very equipped for the best at keeping fires going. It was like, oh, should we just go to bed? And it was, I mean, it was a lovely experience, but it was kind of just like, well, what do we do?
Right. Exactly. And we, in a sense, of course, still think of the dead at this time. It's in Scandinavia, you go to a graveyard and you'll find candles lit all around the graveyards. The memories of the dead. And of course, as we do our ritual meal, and it is very much of a ritual meal at Christmas, same meal. And then there's the thinking of people who maybe were there the year before and aren't there now. And then a question of who will be there the year afterwards when you're reaching older people. And lots of slightly spooky, more, even more spooky to a certain extent in Scandinavia, there are all sorts of omens. You check to see if there's a cross under anybody's chair, because they might not be here the year after. Which way does the candle wax flow? Is it pointing to anybody in particular?
Wow.
So that this awareness... as we sit at the Christmas table, certainly there's an element of sacrifice there, a shared meal, shared wine or whatever else together, and a shared all-time moment, because this meal in families will often go back centuries, the same meal, same place, same table, same chairs, and then people who are alive, new members of the family, and then other members who just weren't there, aren't there anymore. So again, the connection with the dead at that time in the darkness.
Do we see any particular traditions around, like, with celebration? Because it seems like a lot of it is sacrificing to keep things away. Mm-hmm. But I guess it's a time where you wouldn't want to be splashing out on supplies.
Well, again, you're celebrating. You keep things to one side for that celebration. Certainly in Norway, I've seen that there's a particular, on a farm, a particular pig that's kept on one side for Christmas. And pork is, in the past, was very often associated with, and whether that's to do with Freyr or not, we don't know. Although there are very, very difficult to know exactly what traditions come from what and how old they are. But yes, but you do bring out some of the special things, but there's a limit to it. You've got these 12 days before, as the Christmas men come down, 12 days afterwards, the 12th night idea, and then everything has to be finished, because then you have spirits that check to see, have you finished or not? Have you tied it up? So the festival mustn't go on for too long. And the reason, actually, quickly, for those 12 days, so we get 24 days rather than just 12, is because of the movement of Christmas. When they cut 14 years off the year with a Gregorian calendar in about 1700, so what had the midwinter had been the 13th of December was suddenly moved to the 25th again, if you understand what I mean by that.
Okay.
They took roughly 12 days off the year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you get in some places like Shetland, the old Christmas and new Christmas, because they don't trust it, and the government messing around with the year.
Okay.
So just to be safe, you have two Christmases. But yes, there's these 12 days, but definitely you mustn't use up all of the supplies.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, go on.
That kind of rings true to me when I was a child, because my mum was very hell-bent on the Christmas tree went up 12 days before Christmas, and it came down 12 days after, and that's how it always was. That's what I grew up with and kind of what feels very normal to me.
Yeah, exactly. So it's different, but I reckon even out in the moors there, basically, in Yorkshire, closer to this, a sort of Bronte-like Heathcliff, Cathy element of spirits knocking on windows in the middle of the night from outside.
I wish so much more that I'd grown up with a folklore-type society, because it's all completely gone. I can't think of any stories from when I was a kid or any folk tales I was told. I mean, I'm sure I guess like Robin Hood and those ones, but nothing really like this that you see in other cultures. And I remember someone, I think I did a podcast with somebody else, I appeared on one, and they asked me like British folktales, and I really struggled to think of some. I could think of more folktales from Scandinavia from doing this podcast than I could have actual just British folktales. And I was like, why have we lost them? Why have we become so disconnected to them, I guess?
They weren't collected, is the point, very much in Britain in the same way that they were in other countries. In other countries, certainly Scandinavia, Ireland, Scotland, Denmark, Norway, they collected national folk tales there. In Britain, there was less need to create to find a national type. You understand what I mean? But you got local collections. There's a very good collection of legends from all over Britain that Jacqueline Simpson collected, and also from Scotland, which I thoroughly recommend. It's in Penguin, and that looks at all sorts of beliefs from all over Britain.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'll have to have a look at that. Usually I would have saved this for the Q&A, but I actually want to know the answer to this. And I think so Paul asked, what connection does mistletoe have? And I guess that kind of leads, for most people, their thought is going to go to the story of Loki using mistletoe to kill Baldur. Is there any tie to that? Because obviously mistletoe is very, very much linked to Christmas.
Right. It is. If we look at the Nordic side of things, of course, it's a very strange story, this idea of Baldur being killed with mistletoe. Of course, in Scandinavia, in Old Icelandic, the word is mistletein, and then tein is a sword. But Icelanders themselves didn't really know mistletoe. There were hardly any oak trees in Iceland.
Okay.
So this is some sort of idea that's been passed on from elsewhere. Initially, and we do get it also in Ireland, there's a story of somebody being killed with a plant like this, which wasn't supposed to kill somebody. So that story is hanging around. There's another really interesting version of this, though, from folktales in Orkney, collected around 1900, where people talked about mistletoe not being used to kill Baldur, but being used to bring him back to life. And that was waved, that people go into the next world to try and bring Baldur back, and mistletoe is used as a saving thing.
Okay,
but certainly it's associated with the Druids, of course. Anybody who's read Asterix will know about the Druid going and collecting mistletoe. But in Old Norse, that's the only real association. Nothing to do with kissing anybody, at least in Old Norse.
Yeah, I wonder. Maybe it's just a big coincidence.
Yeah, I think, it obviously had meaning, like a lot of plants have particular meaning.
Okay, yeah.
And I think the story of Baldur being killed by being a little bit like Achilles, of course. He can't be killed, but he has his weak point.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of story there. Okay, that's about as far as I can answer that one, I'm afraid.
Do we see any... Or is there like a Nissa type creature? I think for most people they think of the little, is it gonks? They're made famous by IKEA again. I think is that kind of figure with the big hat, little, almost look like a little
absolutely
wolfy troll thing. I know Norway is Nissa. I think in Sweden they have a different name for them.
They have the word tomte. In Sweden. There, yes, these are mainland Scandinavia figures. And they go back to, as I mentioned very quickly as I zoomed over it, they go back to the belief that every farm had a protecting spirit that lived in the grave mound.
Mm-hmm.
And when people, certainly in Western Norway, whenever they baked bread or made new beer, they would always give some to the grave mound, which mustn't be touched at all. It's a particular area. You mustn't take wood from it. You mustn't damage it, because this is the the place where the original man who cleared the land for the farm lived. He's the farm father. And later on, we get in Scandinavia these ideas that you must always leave out porridge for this guy. And certainly, if you do not anything nasty to his porridge, and there's some pretty nasty jokes played on it, you'll find him playing volleyball with you over the farm on his own. He'll throw you and then bang you back from the other side and beat you up badly. If you're lazy, he'll wake you up by kicking you. If you sleep in his, sometimes he had a bed in the house, and if you slept in that bed, then he would throw you out in the night. Now, he was a little sort of Mighty Mouse figure.
Yeah.
So he protected the farm against the wild right. Generally, we have lots of stories of that kind. And you need to be nice to him again. If you don't, then he'll beat you up. Iceland didn't get this figure, and it got most folklore from Scandinavia, like ideas like the water spirits, water horses, things of this kind. But the point is that when they came to Iceland, they believed that there would be nature spirits there, clearly, that every land had nature spirits. Question how you speak to them. These are the Alvar or whatever else. Whether they spoke a different language or not, that was a question. That they would be ghosts, of course. They would come as people died. But Iceland, when they came here, was totally uninhabited, apart from a few monks. And how do you deal with the spirits? You can bring your beliefs with you, but you can't bring the guy on the farm with you. Do you understand what I mean? You can't bring the grave mound. He's not associated with all nature. He's associated with man-made nature.
Okay, yeah.
So we get a few stories of them, of the dead turning into Alvar figures, but we never get the Nissa figure in the same, the protector, even though the Icelanders do create places for the dead to go. And I think this is what's going on here. The farm protector you can't bring with you. So Iceland, for some reason, just has this bunch of 13 bearded weirdies coming around demanding their booze. And somebody was asking, what happens to the ale that's left? There was nothing left. No. When these guys came around, they took it all, both the spirits, and then they would often sometimes have a party for the community afterwards with it. But there was nothing left.
Is there any connection of those 13 to something like the Snow White dwarfs? Because I don't know, when you're reading them out, that's just kind of the feel that I get.
It is. Only to the degree that they're spirits that live nearby. Iceland doesn't really have dwarfs. They're more associated to mining areas.
Okay.
So Sweden in particular, you'd find, of course, we have them in Old Norse mythology, making swords and things of this kind. They're blacksmiths, but they work with iron and metal. They're not servants. You don't mess with them again because they'll do nasty things to you. Like sew your lips up as they do to Loki. You don't mess with them. But they're mainland spirits again. Iceland, we have very little idea of them coming, but I think that's more because they're more associated with metalwork and mining.
Is there no mining in Iceland?
No, they could use bog iron, but not digging into the ground. You haven't got the same sort of... The geology is much more recent than anywhere in Scandinavia. It's volcanic, and Iceland's still growing slightly every year.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a little fusion. Yeah, it means their fishing limits get extended a little bit every year. They're quite happy about it.
what's making that happen? Is it just...
It's volcanic activity, simply, a bit because we're on... Iceland is on the plate, between the two plates, the European plate and the North American plate. And that's what creates the sort of volcanic activity that is going on at the moment. So it grows.
I feel like there's such a fascination with Iceland at the minute. Globally, like a lot of people I meet, just for such a small little island, I feel like it gets a lot of attention. And I know they did a big effort. The tourism board did a good effort, and they've got a good team there who get it out there. But there's a lot of love for the little place.
Yeah, and it's you're talking again about fear. Icelanders are very aware of natural forces. which are being represented by these figures. Mm-hmm. As we've got in this town at the moment, Grindavik, which people heard about in the news. Some people were asking, is this just fake news being made big by the press? No, there's still a lot of magma bubbling around underneath the town, and it's a question still whether it's going to come up or not. But they've got a huge gate crack running through the center where the land had just dropped.
Is that the town that's down by the airport, south of
absolutely.
The airport?
Absolutely. The airport's not in any danger, but yes. So anybody who's heard of the Blue Lagoon, that's also under threat.
Yeah, so when we were there, we drove down to the little town and then round up to the Blue Lagoon.
Absolutely.
We have beautiful pizza there, so I hope the little pizzeria
absolutely. Well, there's nobody there at the moment, so they've all had to go somewhere else for Christmas. Poor people.
Hopefully that's fine. They always, Iceland and their volcanoes, they're always keeping the world on their toes.
Absolutely. I said, this is Loki, of course, when it comes down to it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Is there anything we're missing, do you think, that we need to know?
I don't think so. No, so we've looked at drinking, we've looked at the spirits, we've looked at the ways of prophesying about the year to come. And foods, of course, the special foods. Iceland, since we're looking at Icelandic folklore in particular, Iceland will have a lot of Danish food traditions, which will involve pork, but also lamb. But on the day before Christmas Eve, they have a particularly worrying tradition to my mind, which is that they eat rotten skate, and it smells like ammonia, basically. When you have it, you can typically drink alcohol with it at the same time, but all houses where this is being cooked stink. And I once visited some friends of mine who had the strongest type, and back in the days when we all wore waistcoats, I happened to wear a leather waistcoat, a suede waistcoat, which we had to hang outside for 3 months to get rid of the smell.
Wow.
And skate is sometimes mixed up together, so it's a bit like a sort of very fishy, ammonia-tasting shredded wheat, where you've got all of the cartilage mixed up with the fish, mm-hmm. and it needs a brave person to survive this.
I'm trying to think of what about when it comes to the gift giving side, because.
Yeah.
Like, again, to go back to last year, which was the first time I spent Christmas outside of England, really, but particularly in Norway, one thing I noticed was this idea of, it wasn't just a free-for-all for presents. Like, where I grew up, I mean, I think for most people, or particularly in, let's say, again, in England and in America, it's this idea of Christmas morning, it's an absolute frenzy. The kids just run and rip open all the presents and look at them and play with them and go, thank you, and then that's it. It's all done in like an hour. Whereas when I was up in Norway, it was a kind of, everybody was in somewhat of a circle or together, and you would have your present that you'd got for somebody, and you'd work your way around the circle, and you'd give your present, and it was more of a community feel to it. It lasted. It wasn't an hour. It was the whole evening, and everybody didn't need to have a bunch of presents. You may have only all got three or four, but because you went around and you kind of opened it, you looked at it, you said thank you, maybe spoke about it, took it out of the box, whatever. Then you moved on to the next person, and it was such a refreshing thing. And that's the one takeaway that if I ever do have children, I would love to implement. I love this idea of, it's not all just sheer open up as much as you can and not enjoy what you're getting. There was a very kind of, like I say, community feel to it, and I loved it. I thought it was brilliant.
Absolutely. And I think it's, again, if we think about the year as a whole, we have in Scandinavia generally midsummer. Let's think of Glastonbury, in a sense, large communities, outdoor festivals, things of this kind, celebrating sometimes nation, but sometimes much wider groups. Christmas is this group. It's like the darkness has come in. We're back into the just the family group or the friends, where you have a drink with your friends, as close friends, you raise a glass to them at this time of the year. So yes, it is a strong element of family. And this is what I found certainly coming up to Iceland for the first time in 75. And I've only come back to Britain once since that time at Christmas time. But Christmas, we've all grown up also with Dickens' Christmas Carol, this element there. And in Iceland, you get on the 24th, 23rd, sorry, the night before Christmas Eve, then they shut down the traffic in the streets, and you may have snow coming down outside, and everybody's walking around buying presents until maybe 11 o'clock in the evening. Yeah. They're all hugging each other. They're saying hi to each other and so on. It's a very family thing, very cozy, especially when you have snow as well. It looks like here we might get snow, which in Brighton, I never remember. It used to be sort of rain.
Yeah. Oh, I bet that, all the way down there, you won't have got much.
Yeah. So I see somebody was here, he was asking for a bit more about the wild ride. Just very quickly on that, as I say, the group I talked about with the women, with the woman, Guro with the horse tail, Guðrún with the horse tail, and she led this bunch of the dead and trolls onto farms and took them over until you got this one figure who managed to frighten them away. Sometimes he had a polar bear with him, this sort of Bruce Willis figure. There's a difference between Norway and Sweden and Denmark. Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, it was sometimes associated with Odin's ride. Although we never hear stories about an actual ride of people, a big group like we do in Norway. Often it's just one. A story is there of somebody's out walking and an elf woman comes running past with her breasts thrown over her shoulder, which I think is a bit strange. And then she says to him, tell them I've gone this way, and then runs in a different direction, and then is followed by somebody on a horseback, who is then directed away from her. But then he doesn't really believe this, and he rides off, and he comes back with this woman over his horse. So he's captured this elf woman, and is angry with the person who tried to misdirect him. But that's the sort of story we get all over Denmark and Sweden. Norway is much more this group of people led by somebody who might some people associate with Guðrún Ósvífsdóttir, the heroine of the Völsunga stories, who is sometimes accompanied by Sigurdr, who is apparently so old now he has to hold his eyes open with matchsticks. But they're the ones who come down on the farm and take it over noisily at Christmas time. So that's the wild ride for people there. And of course, as I say, Iceland, it becomes elves instead and things of this kind.
Wonderful. Yep. Let's wrap up the main show, and then we'll let people ask you some questions after.
Okay.
So Terry, thank you very much for joining me once again. And I'd love to have you back in the future, and we'll find another topic very to cover. It's always a lot of fun to sit and talk to a fellow Brit as well.
Absolutely.
I'm sure. I mean, do you even qualify yourself as a Brit
absolutely.
Anymore?
No, once a Brit, you never cease to become a Brit, do you?
We're still pigheaded.
Right. You can mumble about politics and whatever, but there's elements of beer and cheddar cheese that are deep inside one.
You've made me think tonight I'm going to make a charcuterie board. Is that like the little...
No, definitely.
I picked up some... It's a garlic cheddar cheese from a market, I'm going to look forward to it. So that's going to be my evening.
Enjoy that. Have a good Christmas.
Yeah, thank you very much. Is there anything you want to promote at the minute? Have you got any books recently out, where can people best find your works? Because I've read some of your articles on academia.edu that are absolutely fascinating. Yeah. I love them. So
I'll add a few more there. There's a new book we did on the collection of folklore recently, called Grim Ripples, which you can find. It's too expensive to buy, but you can find it in libraries, certainly. And there'll be a book coming out soon, which I'm part of, with a book on Freyr, the background that I got. But yes, but certainly for legends in Britain, look out for Jacqueline Simpson, Angela Westwood, I think her name is, collections of legends, and you'll see a lot of connections to to the Norse world, especially when you're up north.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, I'll have a look. If you want to follow me anyways, Daniel_Farrand1 or the business at Horns of Odin. And again, if you can like, share, comment, all that stuff for the podcast, it helps find new audiences. It's just Nordic Mythology Podcast on all the different channels. And again, if you want to watch the episodes, you can see mine and Terry's pretty faces, as well as the lovely slideshow that he presented earlier. It's just on YouTube, just Nordic Mythology Podcast. Yeah, that's it. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Terry.